Hey all, welcome to Photography Insights, the show that goes behind the scenes and interviews people from the photography world. For episode 130, I'm talking to a guy I've followed for a while in the film community and long admired. I originally noticed his analogue work and started hearing him help out the team at the Sunny 16 podcast. One of the core reasons I came to admire his work was the openness about showing his details and any techniques, but also his fun attitude. He shot many variety of film, from expired to modern, different films, different formats, and it's always exciting to see. Now Eric is full of laughter and smiles, and throughout his interviews, whether as a guest or host, you'll see his friendly personality come out. And I can't tell you how much fun it was talking with him, and we did chat for quite a while, so I've done my best to edit this one down to approximately an hour for you all. And it's been great talking to someone who really has this passion for film and most formats too, like even 4x5. We talk about his adventures traveling around the USA, his expired film and his many camera choices. Eric talks about his start with podcasting too, and he's put together his own show now, together with a lady called Vanya. And it's very different. It has segments of news, reviews, education on photographers, listener messages, and even dev parties. Honestly, the relationship they have is great. I personally thoroughly enjoy listening. There's always something to learn, there's always something to laugh about. And I think it's really nice that they get so many different zines out there and talk about them as well. So in this one, we're going to discuss podcasting, camping and cooking, keeping film cool, infrared, mountain bikes, very slow film, and shooting F64. Now there'll be links to Eric's Instagram, a place where he sells his zines on Etsy, and of course a link to his podcast, allthroughalens.com. Please do check out the friends of the show who always support us, and so if anyone's wanting any developing doing, please do check out filmdev.co.uk. Anyone who's interested in modern large format and medium format, please do look at Steve at Chroma Camera. And for those of you who love the printed medium and looking at books and zines, then please do check out Pete at staticage.co.uk. He's got some lovely stuff. Obviously, don't forget to check out, there's my Facebook group there for anyone who wants to come and have a chat about life and how they're coping with everything. That one is for the photographer's therapy, and there's a link in the show notes to that. And it's funny, recently I was interviewed myself by a group in Croydon, which is run by some lovely people, very charitable. And it was really nice to talk about my work. It's not something I've done too much. All in one go. I've done bits and bobs over the years, so sometimes it's been a bit of film, sometimes it's been a bit developing, sometimes it's been printing, there's been bits of architecture, bits of abandon, and then bits of my portrait with models. So it was nice really to like put across all my work together in one place, and actually it's really nice to see the variety in what I've done. And also what I've learned in that time. And what I was trying to get the message through to the group was that it was about experimenting and learning through different techniques. It was never ever about gear. But obviously gear is important to some aspects of your work. But my main focus of the interview was trying to talk about light. Now, I'm not sure if anyone actually cottoned on to this, but I tried to give away little hints that, you know, in all my shots, this was the only important thing, really. The lens doesn't matter if you haven't got the right light. Exposure is really everything, and choosing how to expose. So it's the right amount of flash, the right amount of natural light, and focusing it in with someone by diffusing it or choosing how to shape it. And it was quite a nice response. I was very pleased, and it was nice to see my work out there in that sense. And it was just amazing how time just flew by. I was absolutely astonished because I've not really done anything like this before. So it was weird to try and plan out how long this would last. I'm not really one for practicing. I'm not really into that. I think you can get a flow with the people involved that you're talking to and work it that way. And it's only a casual thing anyway. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was such a privilege to talk to people and share a bit of my journey. So hopefully again, you've been listening to me talk about my zines are coming up, and honestly, it is not going to be much longer now. I've had a couple of people, I've given them like a sneak preview of it, asked for a little bit of feedback. So I'm working on the final bits of that. One of them is going to be sort of self-published, so I've still got to choose where to get that printed, but someone's helping me with that. And then you'll get more details of the other one very, very soon. So keep listening, keep watching for updates. I'm sure you've seen recently I've been trying a little bit of large format, which has been really good fun. So I'm going to do a fair bit more with that soon. I've got some new film coming. I'm going to still play about with paper. And something else coming soon as well, which once I've got organised. And then see what I can do with printing. So I've just moved my... I've just tidied out my first outbuilding, which is attached to my house. And that is my new diet room. So I've spent a little bit of time making that sort of safe for what I want to do. I'm not entirely sure I'm happy with the layout as yet. But it's always weird getting used to standing there in the dark and then thinking, oh, things are where they were. So there's a little bit of messing about like that. And of course, one of the first times I went to use it, my red light died on me. Now, I have printed in a complete dark before. But because of the new layout and that, it was a bit comical in places. I would put my hand in chemicals and thinking, oh God. So I would put my hands in water again to try and get it out. And, you know, it was stuff like that. So I was a little bit unsure whether it would be light tight. So I managed to put up another extra curtain cover thing in front of the door because there's no actual door on it. And then I got pond lining up with it to block out the light. But again, it's not perfect because light can still sneak in at edges. And then around the window frame, I've taped to the walls and the tape was coming off. So yeah, you know, it's work in progress, but it's not going to stop me getting a print sort of thing. So we'll see how it goes. But I've been having a bit of problem with my enlarger, which is what I use to do the printing. It keeps the top part of it keeps moving, which is sometimes hard when I'm trying to do certain types of printing. So I've been on the lookout for spares and maybe a replacement. So you know, there's always things going on, so I'll keep up to date with that. But for now, let's play the music and let you listen to the one and only lovely Eric. And welcome to the show, Eric.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's been great to finally catch up and get you on here, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Very excited.
It's been great following your work, and I was just sat there one night and I was thinking, God, it's been ages since I was messaging you about some of your work, and I thought we really need to, sort that out, really.
Yeah, let's get to
Well, I know it's always hard, isn't it? Because, we both have the same sort of thing, and we're both podcasting, so we have schedules we follow, and
Yeah, it's always hard to make a little bit of time to do some extra mic work.
yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's nice to actually talk about your own stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't get a chance to do that too much. So it is, yeah, it is a little bit.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And most people are more, because like when you invite them on your show, they know they're there to talk about their work. So, and you have, sometimes only an allotted amount of time, and it's like, do you want to chat? Do you want to know anything? And it's quite often one way, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do try to focus on the guests as much as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, try to. We do get a little chit chatty once in a while.
Yeah.
It
But that's what it's all about, isn't it?
is, yeah. Getting to know people.
And I think your style, and you can tell it's very open, it's very fun, and it's nice to hear you laughing away when you're talking that, and I think that comes across really well.
Oh, good. We do have a lot of fun. It's nice too. And nice that comes across.
Well, one thing I never realized was you started doing this, you're developing film while you're still doing an episode as well. That's really cool.
Yeah, we do dev parties. We've done, oh, 34, 35 of them so far. We've done a lot more, just we scrapped a lot because it's not easy to do. It's not easy to do at all. But one of the things we find just fascinating is that people will develop film along with us when we're doing it, which
Okay.
is just madness. I don't know how they do that because they're not developing the same thing that we are.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine doing that. It'd just be so distracting. It's distracting enough just developing and trying to record an episode and trying to remember all the things we're talking about. Because we always have a subject when we do the dev party.
Yeah.
We try to have something that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Because I know when I've developed, I've thought, right, it's probably the most boring thing you can do is sit and wait and that. So how
Yeah.
can I use my time well? But then I get distracted.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I absolutely used to. Now I can't.
Yeah.
Well, how it started is Vanya and I used to we just call each other up
Okay.
and we would talk to each other while we're developing. Oh, what are you developing? Oh, I'm doing this, or what's this technique that you're doing, or what new developer are you using today? And then we're like, well, why don't we just make a mini episode and just do that? We're talking anyway. Why don't we just push record? And it got a little bit more structured, over the year or so that we've been doing this. So we now talk about like very specific things. The next episode will be about orthochromatic film. And so
Okay.
I've been researching for a few days now. Like, where did orthochromatic film come from? Why are we doing this? Why did Ilford just introduce an ortho film? What was film like before ortho? What's the difference? What amount of light does it capture? All that. I know all of that stuff now. No need to. Absolutely don't need to know this, but I do. And that's kind of the fun part of doing a podcast in general, really.
That's a really interesting way of doing it.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say to you, how much experience did you need with development before you could talk and develop together, sort of thing, do you think?
Needed? I don't know. I know that I don't want to throw her under the bus, but Vanya wasn't exactly the most attentive developer before we started dev parties. She
Okay.
was in the first few. She was barely holding it together as far as just keeping everything there. She was very distracted, like you said. You would start developing, and it was like, oh God, this is going to be 15 minutes, and you wander off and do something else. So when you have to record and you have to be present, that really kind of locked her into like, oh, I can do this. Like, it convinced her that she can do it, and now she's a really, really good film developer.
That's interesting
Yeah,
then.
that attentiveness, I guess, really helps.
No, that's cool. I think it's important.
Yeah, we couldn't do a podcast without that kind of relationship.
Maybe that's the
We're
key then, more people.
I think we're very different people in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, but we're very matched, we match in a lot of ways too, and I think we match in the right ways.
Yeah, I think you can see that. I've listened to it and it's nice, and I think that's the same for other podcasts like our friends at Sonny 16.
I think so, yeah. Aid and Graham are very different people.
Oh, yeah.
Very different, but they really complement each other
Yeah.
in some really lovely ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know it's something I've thought about before, having a co-host, but then I always find it hard to find people that are going to put the same effort in as us.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
finding somebody who's willing to do that
yeah,
is it's a big ask,
it
you
is.
know?
Yeah.
It's a huge ask. And you know, it didn't take me long to figure out that I wanted Vanya to be the co-host. But I think, you know, maybe she should have thought about it a little more.
Bless her.
I probably should have thought about it a little more too. But it all worked out really, really well, really, really wonderfully. I couldn't ask for a better partner than that.
No, that's cool. Sometimes what is it, the thunder of fire or whatever is the best way. Get yourself in there and you either
Yes.
sink or swim, don't you?
Yeah. And I don't think we ever felt like we were sinking. I think we, you know, the first podcast I listened to it not that long ago. It's shaky, you know, but we still had that same chemistry that we have now. And we just kind of built from there. And I think we had something good to begin with. And yeah, and I think that's not me and that's not her. That's our combination. I couldn't do it without her, I don't think. I could probably do something. It just wouldn't be very good. I mean, anybody can talk in front of a mic for an hour.
Very true. Yeah. It's funny when because we have our opinions of ourselves, don't we, doing this,
Oh, yeah.
and they're never good, just like anyone, and we know how nervous guests are. But then when someone says to you, "Oh, your podcast and voice is really relaxing," and I'm like, "Really?"
I've never heard that about myself.
No, I would say yours is a fun voice. There's always laughter in everything you do.
Yeah, we've gotten some bad reviews about that, actually, that we laugh too
Oh.
much. I'm like,
Oh.
oh God, could you imagine like how miserable your life has to be to complain about people laughing too much?
Oh my God. I'm gonna go protest tomorrow for
It's just so silly.
No more
I can't
laughter. No
imagine.
more
No
laughter.
more. I don't get it. But you know, I think. Well, I think when I was on Sunny 16, I was. Well, I mean, when you get real, I was probably not in a very good place mentally and emotionally. And so when I was on Sunny 16, I was very down, very unhappy. And when in the time between I stopped, not stopped doing Sunny 16, but from the last time that I was on to when I started the podcast, a lot had changed in my life. And I felt a lot happier. I was a happier person. And so that was reflected in the podcast that came out, and also what I wanted to do. I wanted to do a happy podcast. I didn't want it to be like, you know, the disintegration of podcasts. I just wanted it to be just, you know, here's me. I can be happy. And I think it threw a lot of people off. I know it
Of
threw Graham
course.
off. Yeah, he felt maybe a little shortchanged, maybe. Like, oh,
Yeah.
I got the depressed Eric. Vanya getting the happy Eric.
That's
Maybe not.
funny.
But that's true. It was. A big difference, a big difference. And I think it threw a lot of people. But still, to be unhappy that I'm laughing or that we're laughing is that's a weird thing to be unhappy about.
Or maybe it was, I mean, when I first started looking at your work, it was like, you can tell. Do you love desert more than anything then?
I like solitude and I don't like trees.
Okay.
And I mean, I got in trouble for saying I don't like trees. Someone actually sent me a book about why trees are important. And I was like, no, I realize that,
You're not uneducated.
environmentally, I love trees. We need trees, and I would rather have trees than people. But, if I had my druthers when I'm shooting, I'd rather have neither. So I don't like trees, and well, I don't like forests in my photos. I don't like taking pictures in the forest. I'm just not good at it. But I like wide open landscapes. I like trees in their proper place, off in the corner, or maybe framing the shot or something. But yeah, a desert scene, or I mean, I call it desert. I guess it's not technically desert. In Washington and Oregon, it's called shrub steppe. There's not like there's not like a solid definition for that, but there's a lot of sagebrush, maybe some cacti here and there. Washington has a little bit of that. But it's mostly sagebrush. So it's this beautiful place where I'm short, I'm 5'4", so I can see above all of the grasses and all of the sage bushes. And you have this just rolling plain of crumpled green, and maybe like a brown house on the horizon or closer if you're lucky. And the air smells of, say, sage, but it's a certain kind of sage that we only have in the Pacific Northwest. It's a very specific smell. And I love everything about that place. I love it. I miss it when I'm not there. I don't live there. I live about 4 hours away from there. And when I'm not there, I miss it. It hurts to not be there. When I take pictures of it and I bring them home and I look at the pictures, I'm just like, oh my God, I wish I were there. I never don't want to be there. But of course, I can't move there. There's no jobs there. There's not really much of anything there. And I love it for that reason. And yeah, so yes, I travel to places like Kansas and Nebraska, and I love those places. I love the open plains and the rolling in the prairies and the buffalo and all of that. I love those places. But home for me is, well, home is East Coast, but home for me now is the Columbia Plateau in Washington, which is a very small place that nobody really knows about, and I'd like to keep it that way. There's a few touristy things there, sort of. They're all natural, it's like not parks. I think there's like a state park, but it's mostly devoid of people who aren't ranchers, farmers, or hikers, and very few of any of those people. And it's just really, really nice.
Well,
So, yeah.
maybe you should have changed its name and kept it
Well,
quiet.
it's not, there's nothing there. No one's going there. I don't know. I love it. And I've done zine after zine of it. And obviously not all of my zines are about that, but that's where I go. The first place I go every year is that. The last place I go every year is that. It's great for camping. It's great for hiking. It's great for driving. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place that's full of wonder and rattlesnakes and black widows and cliffs that you don't notice until you're almost falling off of them. It's a place that will kill you, and it's beautiful and wonderful because of that.
That's an interesting view.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know when I was first looking at your work, I'm sure I saw, maybe read or heard that you like going and do you sleep over and camp?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things was how much film and different cameras you can take with you. And is it a truck or have you got a car?
Well, I have a car, I have a Subaru, and when I go on the road every year for about a month. I have a job, well, I have no job right now, but I'm going, hopefully, back to a job soon where it allows me to take off in the summer for about 5 weeks. So I don't get paid, so it's not like I'm getting paid for these 5 weeks, but they do allow me to take off, and I have a job waiting for me when I come back, mostly because they're just too disorganized to hire somebody else. So I am allowed that, and that's great. So when I do that, I traditionally would bring upwards of 10 to 15 cameras. That I've changed a lot in the past couple of years. because that's a whole camera store's worth of cameras. That's ridiculous
Yeah.
for me. So now I've kind of narrowed it down to, I'm gonna say six. I'm probably wrong about that, but I'm gonna say six. And the film, I have a plug-in cooler that plugs into the cigarette lighter in a car.
Okay.
It cools, it keeps the film 50-ish degrees in Fahrenheit, which is 10-ish centigrade, maybe
Okay.
somewhere in there. It keeps it cool, whatever, like a little bit warmer than a normal refrigerator,
Yeah.
whatever that is. And so I have a lot of film, and since I shoot a lot of 4x5, I've got a lot of film taking up a lot of room. And so I load up like 50-ish holders and shoot those till they're done, and then get a motel room and reload, or reloading in the car sometimes. And if you want to get a lot of dust on your film, that's a great way to do it. It's interesting when you get dust on when you get dust on a sheet of film that's being attacked by condensation. The dust doesn't lay flat on the film. It kind of makes little curls and arches. And so
Oh.
when you scan it, the dust has shadows. It casts a shadow on the film,
Oh my
which is
God.
incredibly difficult to remove. So I don't recommend that, unless you're going for that, maybe. But yeah, I carry a lot of film. I carry a lot of cameras, and I'm out for a long time, and I'm camping almost the entire time.
So that must be a lot of food as well then, and a lot of supplies.
Yeah, it is. I bring all my own food. I don't really do the restaurant thing.
Yeah.
So I'm cooking every day, and mostly snacking. I've discovered that if you're worried about nutrition, which I sometimes say that I am, one of the best things you can snack on is breakfast cereal, because they fortify it with all of these vegetables and mineral, or vegetables, vitamins and minerals, vitamin A, B, C, all of them have supplements. So if you're worried about getting scurvy or something when you're out traveling, just grab some Fruit Loops and eat and snack on that all day. I guess that's some advice that you probably shouldn't take.
Okay.
But yeah, I cook for myself on the road, and I'm out alone for
Okay.
that month. Usually, Vanya joined me for a week last year and the year before for a few days, and that'll probably happen this year too.
That's cool.
But for the most part, I'm alone.
And you think that's part of who you are and who you need to be and where you need to be, sort of thing.
Yeah, I like being alone. I like getting out there. I don't know. I don't live alone. I don't work alone. I'm constantly in communication with Vanya, so I don't have a alone. I don't have that need for aloneness every day. I don't have that like a lot of introverts are like, I need to recharge. I don't have that. And that's really nice. So that for me comes on the road. I love getting out in like the grasslands of Wyoming, and you know, on these roads that you're not really sure if your car can make it, but you know, you're kind of plowing along through the sand, and you stop the car, and there's nothing to hear except for a little bit of a breeze, and some maybe some crows here or there just squawking off in the distance, and there's nothing moving except for the blades of grass and maybe some cows, and sometimes there's like an eagle or something overhead. And it's very silent, but in a way that kind of sucks all of the like nerves and anxiety out of you. It's a very real, and maybe it's not comforting for everybody. This isn't a me thing. It's a very comforting sort of deadness, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, the grasses are brown, and the sand is dry. And you know, there's lizards, and you know, there's not a lot of things that we would normally associate with life. There's a ton of life there, of course, but you don't really notice that right away. And so it really it kind of brings that life out of you. It's I don't know if it's like I'm not trying to say like, oh, the desert's trying to suck the life out of you or something like that. That's silly, but it really does like mentally bring out that it brings you out a little bit, and you can stop. And it's all public land, you know, and so you can
Cool.
walk these pastures, these fields, and these little prairies, and you know, if there's a, I mean, not all of it, I mean, of course, you've got to watch out for no trespassing signs and cranky Americans with guns, but apart from that, you do have this abundance of freedom to shoot anything, to do anything that's not like otherwise illegal. If you want to go and pitch your tent there, you can. If you want to set up a little picnic there, you can. If you want to walk a couple miles off in that direction for some reason, you can. And it's such a wonderful freedom that you don't have in a city or in a town or in a place that has a lot of non or has very little public land or no public land. Like
Exactly.
when I'm traveling in Kansas, Kansas has almost no public land, which is really sad because there's a lot of open space in Kansas. So if you see something that you want to look at a little closer, you can't because there's a big no trespassing sign there. And I don't, some people will cross those, and I don't feel comfortable doing that. Sometimes the landowner will drop by and ask us what you're doing. And then a lot of times then you can make nice and you can get permission to go on their land. This past year when we were doing it, they thought we were Antifa, so we couldn't do that. They were very worried that Antifa was coming to their town to do something. I'm not sure what it was. They were afraid that we were going to do, but no, we were not, in
Because you've got a
fact,
camera.
Antifa. We have a camera, and we weren't local. They're just very afraid. Over the summer, over the past summer, America was very afraid, and really succumbed to a lot of the fear. And we've gotten over a tiny bit, but still, there was a lot of fear between COVID and politically speaking, all the things that were going on. There was a lot of fear, and so shooting in that environment, it was a very different experience. It was kind of all the freedom that I was just talking about. None of that, because I was always looking over my shoulder to see who was looking at us, and there was always somebody watching us wherever we would go. There was always either, usually, I mean, I get it. It's I wouldn't say innocent, because it's I guess an innocent fear. We would always be watched. We'd stop, get out, set up the tripods or whatever. It was three of us traveling for a little bit in Kansas, and 5 minutes would go by, and there'd be somebody there, usually driving up to talk to us. And while before, a lot of times people coming up to talk to us would be like, "Hey, how you doing? What's going on?" That year, it wasn't that at all. It was always, "Who do you know here? Do you know whose land this is?" And it was a very unwelcoming experience. And we're all white, so it was very easy for us to talk our way out of this. If we weren't, it probably wouldn't have ended as well. But that's where we are now.
I mean, you're just a passenger in this sense, aren't you? So, you can't change anything. You suppose you just have to be respectful. That's all you can be, isn't it?
A smile goes a long way. Not as long as a way as it is looking the way I do. Well, you can see I'm a very nice looking fellow. I don't look like I'm going to harm anybody. So, I have a very innocent, boyish face that just it just charms the frowns off of any farmer you please.
That's
I
good.
guess. I don't know. I didn't get shot, so I counted that as a win.
I would.
But we did meet some wonderful people along the way as well. We met the mayor of a town called Bison, Kansas, and he was the sweetest, crankiest old man I've ever met. Loved him to death. So we do meet, that's one of the nice things about shooting out the way I do is that you do get to meet on normal times some really sweet and wonderful people.
Oh, that's nice.
People who don't care at all that you're shooting an old camera, completely disinterested, don't care. They're actually a little offended it's not as old as it should be. They're like, "Oh, is that one of those cameras that shoots those old glass plates?" Like, "Well, no, this shoots film." Oh. Just completely disinterested. What are you doing here? Well, don't know.
Crikey, because most people wouldn't even know what that is.
Well, it's a different place where I go. It's a different place. They do know.
Ah, okay.
It's I don't know. It's a different place. It's a different world in Middle America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you compare that to where I would go, so if like we've just been talking about my city, so that's Roman and 1,000 year olds.
Oh yeah.
I'm not really sure there's a particular camera I should have for the
No, probably
Roman
not.
period.
Maybe some chalk, yeah.
Yeah. Can you just pose there? I'm just taking a photograph. I might be a few hours.
Could do a relief for them, I guess.
Yeah. Or no, I think I'd probably have to do something even older, where maybe just smack their face on a wall and go, "Look, there's sort of a portrait."
Oh, yeah, you could do a mosaic.
Yeah. Yeah, literal. Yeah. Be different. But when you're out there, then is this the sort of work you're doing? Like, obviously, you pick the, you've chosen that picture again. I like that. It's like a sphere. Did you say it was a gas tank?
It's a propane tank.
Propane tank, yeah.
It looks like something. People compared it to, oh,
Like a mine
well,
in the water.
it looked. People don't know what it was. I didn't know what it was at first, and I saw the nozzles up top. Like, that looks like a propane tank, and then I looked it up, and yes, it was a propane tank. It looks like something like there was a Swedish painter who did like hyper realistic futuristic 80s paintings. They made it into a TV show on Amazon, and it's Tales from the something, not Crypt.
All
It's that, and yeah, it looks like something from that, something somewhat futuristic
right.
but also old at the same time. And I don't know, I saw that, I drove past it, and it really just like, oh, it captured my imagination, you know, because it doesn't look like it belongs there.
It
And
doesn't.
it's a very deceptive picture. Just frame left, outside of frame left, there's a garage, like a normal looking garage. And just out of frame right, there's like a normal looking road. So it looks like there's just this ball in the middle of nowhere in this field with these trees way off in the background. It's not. That's just camera magic. But yeah, it did. Your eyes capture, your eyes can be trained, I guess, to not see the things that you don't want in frame, so that nothing that you're shooting, so nothing that's outside of frame exists for you. If it's outside of the frame, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not there. You can change that, of course. You can move your camera a little bit, move your camera the other way a little bit, and it does matter then. But when you're looking for a shot, what catches your eye is what's in your frame, and so whatever catches your eye needs to be in the frame, and whatever doesn't needs you need to figure out a way to get it out of the frame. And that can mean a lot of different things. That can mean, you know, I'm gonna shoot with a different lens, so, or you know, I'm gonna take it out in post. You know, some film photographers are very unhappy about doing that. But you know, if there's something in your photo that you don't want there, and you don't want to go physically remove it, and you want to take the picture anyway, you have your choice between not taking the picture or removing it in post, like with Photoshop or something. And I choose to remove it in Photoshop. So this picture, I did not do that with this picture. So this picture is, it does look the way it looked in real life. You know, I didn't do anything other than add a red filter for the black and white. So this is how it looked. If you looked straight at it, that's what you would see. That would be your field of vision. And that's what I saw when I drove past it. That's exactly what I saw. And it's neat to be able to catch something out of the corner of your eye. Have it, you know, have your brain tell you, no, stop what you're doing, turn around. And then being able to go back and interpret that exactly as you saw it on film. And then being able to catch it with a few different emulsions. So I usually do that. I'll do like, I don't know, Fomapan 200. And then I have this old Ansco film that I'm shooting. And then I have this weird color stuff that I'm shooting. And I catch it in a few different ways. And if you know your camera well enough, and if you know your emulsion well enough, you'll be able to know, like, okay, I want this look, so I'm going to be able to get this look with this emulsion, with this camera, and with this lens. Or, you know, if you don't, you can be happy with the surprise that you get when you're done developing. And all of that can be really, really rewarding,
Oh, God,
regardless
yeah.
of how you're doing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think some of that, like you say, though, comes from experience, doesn't it? Of like we've talked about repetition of doing things, shooting with the same stuff. So you know, oh, HP5, I know, has this look now. Do I do FP4? Do I do Tri-X? Whatever. And
yeah.
I think it's hard because some of us can easily sway towards trying new things rather than thinking, do I really need to do this? And will I actually gain anything from this? And, you know, one role's not enough.
No, it's not. But it... Well, I guess maybe it could be. I think it depends how we treat the roles. The way, I mean, with shooting large format, you do it sheet by sheet. You know, I develop at most 4 sheets at a time.
Okay.
So I'm doing, you know, 4 photos. I'm developing 4 photos at a time, tops. Mm. And so that's, in a roll of 36, that's the stuff at the end that you just blow through so you can develop the roll.
Yeah.
So if you treat your roles like it is frame by frame, which, I mean, granted, this is a pain to do. There's no real reason to do this, but you can do it and treat each frame as its very own picture. You can really test what you can do with a role. Now, you can't develop it differently. You know, halfway through, you can't change how you develop it, but like you can with sheet film. But, you know, I mean, I don't really do it much with that. I don't really do that with sheet film much anyway. So you can really test what a role can do and what it can't do. You can't test like different developers and things like that with one role. That obviously takes time, but you can do a lot. You can do a lot with a single role.
Mm.
Yeah. And also if you have like a role that you don't know that you're shooting, like, well, I'm shooting HP5. I always shoot HP5. I want to try something else. I have this, I don't know, FOMA retro special, retro pan. Want to see how that shoots compared to HP5. Shoot the same thing. Get 2 cameras that are kind of the same. Shoot the same scene and see which one you like better. You know, you'll probably like HP5 better, but, you know, maybe not. I didn't. You know, I ended up doing that, and I ended up liking this weird retro soft film or whatever it's called, and it's kind of my go-to film now.
That's good, though, isn't it?
You can't explain these things. There's no accounting for taste.
Well, no, exactly. I think we can sometimes get confused with people that maybe have shot for years that they do their tried and tested approach, but it's like they're not the people to be talking to about, have you tried this?
No, they're not. Because they will always tell you to shoot Tri-X or whatever they're shooting. And that's great.
Yeah.
You know? I like Tri-X developed in this weird PyroCat, but you have to shoot Tri-X at 60 ISO rather than 320. And if you want to develop it this way, but this, you need this kind of agitation for it, and you get it just right.
Mm.
Like, nobody who's just getting in the film wants to hear that. I don't even want to hear that. And I love that stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, you want to talk to the people who have shot a lot of film.
Yeah.
And that's me. I've shot a lot of film. And I get 3 or 4 questions a day on Instagram from people about, like, well, what happens if I would shoot this film and this camera and develop it like this? And I love those questions. I never get tired of those questions.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
That's good, though, because
yeah,
it's like you say, you know, you're giving back to the community now because of your experience, aren't you?
Yeah, and I had people like that for me, too. You know, there was the Lance, I forget his last name. He does the laboratory films. He buys a bunch of old stock, old emulsions, okay, and he re-rolls them and sells them.
Ah.
And that's where I got my start in shooting like expired film and old film and weird like Soviet films. That was where all of that for me came from. This guy was doing it, and I'm like, whoa, that's way cooler than, you know, whatever I was shooting at the time, you know, Portra probably. So it's for me, it was, oh, I love this so much more. And then, you know, once you're doing all of that, you can go back and find the things that you really like and maybe zero in on a look that you really like. And I've been doing that lately. And that's kind of something that is a bit new for me. But I still do the experimenting too. Like right now, I'm trying to figure out how to properly shoot and develop X-ray film in a camera.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's not. It's easy to. It's sort of easy, But you know, it takes a lot of trial and error, and I've been working on this for months now. I'm still not happy. So that drive to experiment is always hopefully going to be there.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I think some of us are like that. I love trying new stuff.
Yeah.
I picked up infrared
Oh, yeah.
for the first time and it was weird. It's like one or two that were exposed okay, and then some of the others that are underexposed, and it was guesswork. And I think originally
Yeah.
I didn't even have the right size filter. So I just handheld the filter to the lens.
Are you using an IR filter for the infrared?
Yeah, I
Really?
am.
Yeah, I've never done that. And
Okay.
it's one of those things where I don't know how I feel about it for myself. Like it's like I don't want to be a jerk. Like pinhole photography. To me, I don't want to do it because to me, it all kind of looks like pinhole photography. Now, not all of it. There's actually a photographer who I was just talking to the other day, who shoots a lot of pinhole, and I love his stuff. I just it's because it doesn't look like pinhole.
I imagine.
And so a lot of the pinhole just ends up looking very samey. And I don't think I could make it look not samey, so I don't shoot it. And that's my deficiency there. But I think for me, IR would be the same way because it does like, oh, look, the leaves are white and the sky is black and the clouds are wispy. And I don't know what I would do with that. I don't know where I don't know if I'm creative enough to like, okay, here's where I want to use this. And so I'm just like, and I'm not like, I'll not use I'm like, nobody should use IR film because hey, if I'm not using it, more for you guys. But I don't know what I would do with it. And it's such a weird deficiency that I have. Like, I can't wrap my brain around, like, oh, what do I do with this? Like, I have IR film. I have some old IR film from, like, I don't know. I think it's actually from the 40s. And it's still a little photosensitive, tiny, little tiny bit so photosensitive. But I don't know what I would do with an IR filter. I have absolutely no idea what I would do with that. You can't see through them, right? I mean, it blocks all visible light, right? That's a pain. So that means I forget to put my filter on. That's what that means for me. I line up the shot, I set it up, and I forget to put the filter on. That's exactly how me shooting IR would do.
I'd love that. Yeah, I'd set up and then think, oh no, I didn't put the filter on. Oh my God. And, oh, lens cap on. Oh, honestly, such stupid stuff and so many different things. And I was the same initially. And what I did, I went on a bike ride, took the camera with me, and I thought the only place I can think of that will still be green, because bear in mind it was winter. So I'm looking for evergreens. There's a golf course about 4 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, hang on a second, this could work really well because obviously sometimes you have decent sized trees along either side, and then there's a sand bunker, and then there's a little pond in one of them because it's quite a nice course.
Yeah.
So I pulled up with that, and some of the trees just started coming out, but again, wasn't exposed enough.
Okay.
First time I'd shot it,
Yeah.
everyone had said, focal distance, you can't focus it because obviously in theory you can't see the light.
Well, yeah.
So you can shoot infinity, obviously.
But you can set it up, right?
Yeah, but what you're seeing is not the same thing in light, is it? So
Well, but the focus should be the same,
the
shouldn't
focus,
it?
no, but you look at your pick your camera up next time and look, they'll have infrared settings on them and the distance scales are different.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
No,
yeah. One of your lenses will have it. They'll have little red marks for infrared.
Interesting. Is that what
Yeah.
those are for?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I was like, well, I'm just going to guess because that's how I work.
Oh, that's so interesting. So light is what refracted differently in the infrared spectrum? I mean, it makes sense. I don't know. That's fascinating.
Yeah,
I had no idea. I had no idea.
I won't ever focus on anything close. So I shot
Okay.
some golf, some football posts as well. But then they came out super bright because they're already white.
Sure, yeah.
So it was like that didn't work so well. So I still need to go back to the golf course, I think, and maybe adjust it again. Maybe do 9 stops because I think it was 7 stops of light
Okay.
was the guess.
So
However.
if you're shooting infrared without the filter, it just works like regular black and white film. But I mean, obviously, it would still capture the infrared, though, right? It would just capture everything else over, and it wouldn't be as noticeable. Is that right? That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's more or less just regular film at that stage.
Okay.
The only other problem I didn't have was I didn't have a shutter release cable.
Okay. Yeah.
So I just had to adjust to the minimum I've got on the lens, which was,
Okay.
I don't know, what is it on that lens? Maybe a 60th of a second or something. No, nah, it can't have been that less because it wouldn't have worked. Might have been a 60th, yeah.
Okay.
That's all I could get away with. So I was like, because obviously you really need a shutter release for that low, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Anything
Yeah,
lower.
it's yeah.
But I was on my bicycle as well. So it's not like I could carry a lot of stuff with me.
True.
I don't take a backpacker around. I'm a very minimal photographer.
Okay, you don't have like saddlebags or anything?
No. I'm a
Okay.
mountain biker.
I see. Okay.
The bike has a purpose. You get muddy if it's muddy.
That
That's
I just got myself a mountain bike,
okay.
and I'm really excited about loading it up with camera gear and going to places where I can't drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's fun.
I recently got a camera that actually goes back to what we were talking about bicycling. It called the Cycle camera. It's the RB Cycle, so a rotating back cycle. It was made by Graflex before they were Graflex. It was a company called Fulmer. And it's from like 1900 something. And it's this huge, huge camera that they insisted was small enough to take on a bicycle, which is why it was called the cycle camera. And so I don't know where you're supposed to hold this when you're biking. I don't get the theory on that. I'd like to see the marketing campaign from this, actually. But that's the camera I got, and that's the camera I want to shoot with on a bicycle. I want to do this. I'm like, okay, I'm going on a bike. There's a wildlife refuge that I discovered in this one county in Washington, and it's 32 square miles of nobody else is there. And it's rugged land. It's probably the worst ground I've ever seen. There's a weird geological history that involves like glacial floods and glaciers that came through. And so the ground is strewn with boulders the size of basketballs to the size of houses.
Oh, God.
And so walking around on that is tough, but biking on the lanes that are there is actually pretty easy. They're old farm roads. And so I'm planning on biking through most of these 32 square miles that I can get to, and with this cycle camera. Very excited about that. And so sometimes I'll see a scene and I'll pick this lens or this film or this camera, or sometimes there'll be a project that I'm doing an ANSCO project right now. Or sometimes it'll just be this thing in my head that I want to do for really no reason. I think that, oh, well, this camera, you could take it on a bicycle. So I'm going to take it on a bicycle and see what I can do with it. And I think it makes no sense. It's just something to do for a weekend or two. I'll be camping. It's going to be a getaway. I'm going to be camping on a bike. I've never done that before. I've never camped on a bike before. And so I'm kind of excited about that.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I hope so.
Sounds a weird camera, without a doubt.
It folds up. I mean, half of it is the body of the camera, and the other half is a focal plane shutter. Like, there's literally half of it is a focal plane shutter, and over half the weight is the focal plane shutter. And I think it originally shipped without the rotating back, this big that shutter, and it didn't have a shutter at all. And so I think to get a shutter on it, you had to buy like a shutter, like an extra shutter, this big box of a shutter. So originally it was just you take the lens cap off exposed for a second because your emulsions are really slow and put the lens cap back on. That was how you took a picture. And then once film speeds got faster, you needed a shutter. And so they had this shutter you could buy as an attachment. And that's what I have. And so that's what I'm going to be carrying with me is this big contraption. And probably a few other cameras too, because why not? Why
Yeah, it's not heavy enough, so why not add more weight?
If the ground is there's maybe 400 feet of difference in, from the highest point to the lowest point. So there's not that much I have to travel. It's not like a hard mountain bike trail, I'm not,
Yeah.
I'm old and pudgy. I can't do what I want to do. So I'm just going to take the farm lanes and just take it easy. Take a weekend to do like 10 miles or something.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, although I went on a bike ride, I only probably did about 4 or 5 miles tonight. But
That's 4 or 5 miles more than I've done.
it's 4 or 5 miles than I've done for, weeks and weeks and weeks. But there's some, some lovely pictures. One of them I really loved was there's like an old building that's isolated on a tiny patch of green, and you've got some lovely clouds going on above it. I really
That's,
like
I
that
mean,
shot.
thank you. That's a lot. When you can find a house like an old house like that, and the sky behave, because the house is always going to be what the house is. You can't,
Yeah.
not much you can really do about that. And the ground is generally going to be what the ground is, and so you're going to take a picture and it's going to be pretty or it's not, and not much you can really do about that. But if you catch it with the right light, which may mean, may mean 8 in the morning, 8 at night, noon, not usually noon, but sometimes. But what really does it is the sky. That's the thing that's dynamic. That's the thing that's always going to be changing. And so if you get these big, puffy white clouds, and you get them with a long exposure, this is just me. I mean, other people might think this is disgusting, but with a certain exposure and a certain filter and a certain film, and you get like a slight, if you have a long exposure, a slight movement in those clouds, it makes them look a little off, but not weird, not like you're taking like a super long exposure of clouds or
No,
there's
I know what
like
you mean,
long
yeah.
trails, but
Just a
just
slight.
enough to like it's a little uncanny valley, and it attracts. I think it attracts people's eye a little bit because it's not something you could see in nature. You can't see that. Our brain doesn't extend things a tiny little bit. We get large smears of clouds. We get that. We understand what a smear looks like. But that little bit of like movement, a little bit of movement in the grass, it's at once familiar and foreign because we've seen grass move before, but we haven't, we don't, we're not used to seeing it captured, that movement captured. And that's where everything else is still, because sometimes the wind will come through and some of the softer grasses will move. And some of the tougher grasses won't, and they'll look the same. And so you get this one little bit of bunch grass that's just like all shaky, and get this other bit of what looks like bunch grass but isn't, just kind of standing still. And it's really disconcerting when you're looking at it in a photo. And I love that. I love confusing myself when I'm looking at the pictures. Like, why the hell did that
What film is
happen?
that one then? Do you know?
Well, if I'm shooting low ISO, a lot of times I will shoot this stuff called Arista ortholitho. And that's, you can shoot it anywhere between 0.75 ISO and points, or 0.75 ISO and 6 ISO. And it's not made for regular photography. It's made for lithography. So it's made to make a black or transparent transparency. But if you shoot it at that low of an ISO and you develop it a certain way, and don't jiggle it too much, you get these beautiful sweeping grays. It's still pretty contrasty, but you do get these beautiful grays. And so you're shooting, it's an ortho film. So you're shooting not what the old plates used to look like, but what old photos, like after the plates, but before regular film came in, used to look like. And so it automatically has this vintage look to it without you doing anything, because it's not capturing reds, essentially. And so it will capture it in a really odd way, but very slow way. So you do get all of these you're capturing all these movements, because when you're out in this vastness, this solitude of stillness, when you capture just a little bit of movement, it really sticks out. It's very noticeable and striking. I love it. I love it. Whether it's like, there's a picture I took in Nebraska of cows at a watering hole. But they were just, they're just kind of, it was a hot day. It was like 100 degrees, which is like, I don't know,
Stupid
something
hot.
centigrade. It's really hot. It's hotter than you want to be out. And the cows are all wallowing. They're all kind of like just mellowing out in this big pond. But there were a couple that were moving their heads. And so I got that movement. They were swishing their tails as well. So I got that movement, because you can, if you're shooting for, well, if you shoot well with large format, it gives you the opportunity to shoot like f64, which is a really, really tiny aperture. And so you have to shoot a lot longer. So you'll end up doing, like, even with a 100 speed film, like f64 in 1 second exposure. Well, but if you shoot like really, really slow film, you'll do 30 seconds exposure or a minute long exposure. And so you can really drag out the movement. You could also walk in front of your camera and it wouldn't pick it up. It's stuff like that that you can do. It really allows you to make some pretty crazy mistakes, not get caught for it too. Like starting the exposure and maybe putting a filter on midway because you forgot to, or something like that. It's very forgiving. So, and also with shooting at that kind of aperture, it tightens everything up. It makes things very crisp. It's very crispy. It's a very crispy aperture. Whereas like shooting wide open at like 5.6 or 2.8 or something, that will give you a shallow, what's called a shallow depth of field. And so the stuff in front of you is very blurry, and stuff behind of what you're focusing on is very blurry. And so you can, interact with, you can do things with that. You can interact with that a little bit.
I think as soon as we're sort of out of COVID, I think I'm gonna actually start using my FOB 5 a bit.
Nice.
I want to learn a bit more. I'm thinking of shooting paper though.
Yeah, I've never done that. There's a listener named Alloy Anderson. He's been experimenting with paper in his and I don't know if it's 4x5 or just medium form, but he's been shooting on paper, and he's getting some really, really wonderful results, and it's so inspirational. Yeah, I don't know how I would develop that. I guess in a tray, but I don't really do tray developing, so I'm not sure what I would do with that. I don't know. But one of the nice things about this film that I was just talking about, this Arista film, is that it's dirt cheap. It's like really dirt cheap. It's like pennies for a shot, whereas most 4x5 film is $1 to $2 a shot.
It's welded.
Yeah, so but it's really tiny and thin. It's very, very thin. It's very, very hard to work with. There is a notch on it, but it's just a tiny little clip off the side, and you have to kind of feel it with your finger when you're in the dark bag. Though you can load it under red light if you've got a dark room, which I don't. But if you do, you can load it under a red light. Because it's ortho. It's ortho film. That's not sensitive to red light. So there's that.
That might be an option for me then, because that's the main reason, obviously, that's putting me off. Cost.
The cost of 4x5 is well, it's why I shoot Arista in general. It's just cheaper film. I think it's FilmaPan. You're shooting FilmaPan, which is still a cheap film to begin with.
What do
It's
you
like,
develop that in though?
I develop all of my FilmaPan in a, and I don't know why I do this. FilmaRetroPan has a special developer called FOMO Retro Special. I don't know what the developer is. I've been trying to figure this out. I know the ingredients, I just don't know what it was, but it's based on. But it's a developer, it's not a one shot. You can develop, they say, 100 sheets in this before it goes bad, or like 30 rolls or something like that before it goes bad. And that seems, I guess, possible. So I've been developing all of my FOMAPAN in this, and what it does is it gives like a super chunky grain to everything. And if you're shooting like 35 or medium format, even, you probably don't want that. But since I'm doing 4x5, big grain isn't that big of a deal, because it's a much bigger area. So that's what I've been using, and it's quick. It's like 4 minutes for FOMAPAN 100, and 6 minutes from a pan 400. You can't push with it really. I think you can do a stop before it gets really, really, really chunky. But I don't do a lot of pushing anyway. I don't do a lot of that. I shoot mostly box speed.
Yeah, I do.
But for everything else, I've been using Pyro. I'm using PMK Pyro, which is what I thought was an advanced, like, oh, this is a very confusing developer. And it's not. It's a really simple developer. If you can use Rhodanol, you can use Pyro PMK. But what that does, it's a staining developer, so it stains your negative brown, which is great for printing, and I think it does something for scanning as well. I don't know for sure. But one, the brown negatives look pretty, so that's a bonus. I like the grain that it produces on the film as well. So if you're looking to try something new, try Pyro PMK. It's a fun developer. It's a really, really fun developer.
Yeah, it's funny. So, I've got Pyro 510.
Oh, I have not used that.
But I haven't shot any low ISO films.
Oh,
So
is
I've only used it
it?
once.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I use Pyro on like my faster stuff as well. It's not. It's
Okay.
not. It is a slow. It's got a slow developer. They want you to, like, if you're shooting FP4, they want you to shoot it at 64 ISO.
That's
If you're
right, yeah.
shooting HP5, they want you to shoot it at 200. And I don't do that. I probably should, but I don't. The same is kind of true for the FomaPan stuff that I use. Actually, all FomaPan, you should probably be shooting it a stop slower than box speed, probably.
Yeah.
Just a tip. I don't do it, but probably should be.
There's a lot of lessons, aren't there?
There's so many lessons that I should follow. So much of my own advice that I should really heed.
You should write yourself a list today. I'm
I
going to follow
should.
my
I should.
advice.
I should. Yeah, I should write myself a list. Things I need to do.
No, that's cool. Well, I think we're through the formal part of the interview, Eric.
Okay.
I think I need to get you into my random questions.
Oh, let's go. Bonus round. No whammies.
I put together some special ones I made up today.
Okay.
Actually, I thought of one while I was outside, and I thought, please remember this.
Did you
Because
remember?
I've.
'Cause I never remember those things.
Yeah, exactly. So, right.
Okay.
Where should we start? Let's have a look. Right, let's start with a simple one like this. So, there is a new fashion law, and you have to choose between double denim, double camo, or tartan.
Double denim is like denim pants, denim jacket.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going for the George Michael look there.
Yeah.
Or tartan. That's just like a it's like plaid, like both like double plaids. So
Think of
yeah,
Scottish
that I would go that I would do that. Why not?
top
Why
to
not?
bottom
Yeah, I'd
tartan.
even get a funny hat. Yeah. Yep, I would do it. Sure.
Okay.
I've got no moral opposition to that.
That's a good job. I'm not sure it's the most pleasing on the eye, is it?
I wouldn't be looking at it. It'd be everybody else's problem.
No, that's fair enough. Okay. Your next one. So, political correctness has gone mad, and Pac-Man has been edited due to constant drug abuse.
I can see that,
What
yeah.
do the pills need to be replaced with?
Does chocolate count as a drug?
No, that'd be fine. Because obviously,
Okay, then
Pac-Man,
chocolate, absolutely.
that'd be much better, wouldn't it?
I mean, I would like it.
So
I mean,
Pac-Man's
I would just
chomping
join them.
chocolate.
Yeah, I would just join them.
Yeah. I
Yeah,
think that's a
I could go
better
for some chocolate.
idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, chocolate is probably a drug, which is probably why we're so on board with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that.
Well,
Chocolate.
we've just reinvented Pac-Man.
Oh, good. That's what Pac-Man needed. It's reinvention. It was just getting a little repetitive there.
Exactly, after 40 years, it needed a change,
Yeah.
didn't Okay, I like that. So, excuse me. New wallpaper has been invented. And whatever is on the pattern is also edible. What pattern would you choose to put up on your walls?
Okay. So this would be a case of the strawberries taste like strawberries, the raspberries taste like raspberries, and the schnozberries taste like schnozberries. Mm-hmm. So I will go with schnozberry. Schnozberries.
So mm-hmm. you just have that everywhere?
Yes, absolutely. Wall-to-wall schnozberry.
I mean, can you imagine? You can just go lick your wallpaper. It never...
I mean, you can anyway if you want to.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't taste of berries, though.
Probably not. No.
No.
No. No.
I thought it was an interesting one, that.
There we are.
Mm. Okay. So, your country has just created a lottery of power, and you've been selected to use your own presidential order.
Okay, so I can issue a presidential order. Mm. Okay.
So it's your lottery. What would you do with that?
Oh, well, I mean, you can't force people to treat each other well. Mm. So you can see, that would be a presidential decree. Everybody treat each other well. But an order that could actually be enforced.
Mm.
Well, the executive orders in our country are very non-enforceable. They're just kind of like happy suggestions.
Ah, okay.
So in that case, I would put an end to business interests in public lands.
There you go.
Because we've got a lot of drilling and stuff in public lands. So I would say no more of that, thank you.
Yeah.
A lot of that would be gone. Yes.
I think we hear about that on the news even over here, mate.
Oh yeah, it's bad. Mm. It's really bad. We're kind of jerks about it.
Mm. It's a bit strange, that, to be honest.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Hmm. No, that's cool.
So I would do that. Yes.
No, that's cool. I like that. Okay, so someone in your family has egged the president, and they've all been put in front of a lineup. So in the lineup, you've got your wife, your mother, and a random lady.
Okay.
Now, you know it was actually one of your family. Mm-hmm. So who would you pick out and condemn?
Well, knowing the president we have now and my mother's predilection in her politics, it would absolutely be my mother. And nobody would believe me if I said it was not.
So you would condemn your own mother?
Well, I mean, you know, she shouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a functioning democracy,
mm-hmm.
we have to live by the rules of polite society that we have set up for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That said, if she would have egged the former guy, I probably would have kept it under wrap.
Yes.
While simultaneously throwing a party for her. Yes. But that would not have happened.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, I like that. Mm. That's cool. Thank you for that.
I'm honest.
And your last one. So you have to either give a present, a pint, or give a punch to each of the next three people.
Okay, a present, a pint of like of beer.
Yep, a present or a punch.
Present, pint, or punch. Present.
Okay.
So the present can't be a pint.
No, it's got to be more of a gift, really.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That would be cheating. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So you've got Eric the Victorious, who was king of Sweden during the 10th century.
Okay, I don't know much about him.
No, Eric Idle. AKA Monty Python.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And Eric Cartman from South Park.
Okay, well, I don't know much about this royalty fellow.
Mm.
So, but I do know that to curry any favor, I would have to present some sort of present. So, fine, I guess, whatever. It gets me in, and maybe I can take down the monarchy from the inside. Sure. Eric Cartman needs to be punched anyway. So I would honestly just love to have a pint with Eric Idle. I think it would just be a wonderful afternoon or evening, whenever pints are acceptable.
Oh, yeah, that sounds quite a sensible approach, I think, because, I mean, let's face it, a Swedish king's probably drunk most of the year anyway.
He doesn't need more. I mean, and the present's not, this would be a good present. I'm not going to give him a great present. It's going to be fake, whatever it is. He's not going to know because he's a Swedish president. What does he, or the Swedish king, what does he know? Yeah, it'd just be some crap I have lying around. He'd be like, oh my God, this is so
No,
exotic.
because obviously, depending on the period, so if you was time traveling, for instance, you could give him anything and it'd be
Oh, that's
amazing.
true. Absolutely. Yeah, I could literally give him a screwdriver and he would just be, oh, this is fascinating. Probably. I don't know. But yeah, I would do that. I would do that. Or a photo.
Oh,
Just
God.
wow him with a photo. Man, the times we would have.
There you go. You've
Yeah.
got a future j career in the past.
I do. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you for going through those, Eric. That was fun.
Oh, that, yeah, I was not expecting those. Those were delightful. Those were really delightful.
I like to have my little take on life, so.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. We should do things like this. We're going to steal your idea. No,
That's
we
all
won't steal
right.
your idea.
You're welcome to it. That's fine. Do you want to tell everyone where we can check out your work online?
Sure. The easiest place to do that would be at conspiracy.of.cartographers on Instagram.
There we go.
And that's pretty much it. I'm on Flickr as well. I'm not sure how to find me there. I think it's probably Conspiracy of Cartographers. Most things are. The podcast is allthroughlens.podcast on Instagram, and we also are at allthroughlens.com. And if you search literally any place you can find podcasts, we're there.
There you go. And give it
Easy
a
enough.
listen.
Yes,
You
please.
must do. No, that's cool. And then my final thing then is, have you got someone in mind as a recommend for someone maybe I can look at some different genre or something?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to recommend Vanya. Not just because I'm contractually obligated to do that, but because her photography is very different from mine. And I adore it. And she is just a fun person to get to know and a fun person to talk to because her experiences are very different than most people's. She shoots underwater and in the water. So that's weird. I don't even go in the water. I haven't been swimming in, I don't know, how old am I? 25 years, maybe? I don't know. It's been a long time. So her doing things in water is amazing. So her, 100%. And that's at Surf Martian on Instagram, or just listen to the podcast because she shows up once in a while.
Just once in a while.
Just once in a while.
That's cool. Thank you so much, Eric. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. It's been really fun. It's been a lot of fun.